We've learned a lot from the COVID-19 pandemic, and not just about the virus itself or how people are responding to it. It's also shedding light on another health crisis affecting Americans, one that's been around long before COVID-19, diabetes. A few numbers for you. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 34.2 million Americans are diabetic. It's a little more than 1 in 10. Another 88 million, or 1 in 3, are pre-diabetic. Diabetes deaths rose 17% last year. Deaths among younger people went up 29%. And of those who have died of COVID in the U.S., at least 40% had diabetes. Plus, there are people with diabetes who never got sick from COVID but were harmed by the isolation and disruption it caused. It's a public health problem that we were making gains on a while back, but it may be getting worse now, despite spending billions of dollars on new treatments in recent years. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you or someone you know have diabetes? What is it like living with it? How do you manage it? And how has the pandemic affected your ability to control it? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Roger Kuhlstedt is an endocrinologist with SSM Health Dean Medical Group. He practices mainly in Baraboo and Madison. Dr. Kuhlstedt, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, those numbers I just shared seem pretty bad. Do they line up with what you see with the prevalence of diabetes?
Yes. So diabetes is by far the most common condition that we see. We don't know exactly how many people have diabetes in the United States because many of them are undiagnosed, but the numbers that you mentioned seem more or less to line up with most estimates of how common diabetes is. Chances are that most of our listeners know someone who has type 2 diabetes. And we should also include type 1 diabetes in this group. Mm-hmm. Which we estimate about 1 in 500 people, perhaps more, have type 1 diabetes.
And let's separate those two out to get the basics here. What is type 1 diabetes versus type 2 diabetes?
So that's a great question. Type 1 diabetes is a condition in which the immune system, which is normally in charge of fighting infections, makes a mistake, if you will, and it begins to attack parts of your own body. And in this particular case, the immune system attacks the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. And when that occurs, the pancreas can no longer produce insulin, which leads to high blood sugars and, if left untreated, something called ketoacidosis, which can be fatal. Type 2 diabetes develops a little bit differently. So in type 2 diabetes, the current theory is that people develop something called insulin resistance, where the pancreas is still able to produce insulin, but the insulin doesn't work as well as it should. And this is a little bit of an oversimplification, what ends up happening is the pancreas initially tries to compensate by making a little more insulin to try to get the sugars under control. But over time, either the resistance overcomes the pancreas's ability to make insulin, or the pancreas simply begins to fail, and the cells that produce insulin sort of burn out, for lack of a better term. In both cases, blood sugars begin to rise. Probably the biggest differentiator is that type 1 diabetes can occur regardless of whether you are overweight or not, and can only be treated with insulin, whereas type 2 diabetes, we tend to see a little bit more in patients who have become overweight, and you can use insulin as well as other medications for it.
What do we know, especially when it comes to type 2 diabetes, what do we know about lifestyle factors that contribute to our risk and things that we can control and then use to prevent developing type 2 diabetes?
So there are several studies looking at preventing type 2 diabetes. And we now know that there is a condition called pre-diabetes, where people don't yet have high blood sugars, but they are not entirely normal. So for reference, a normal fasting blood sugar is less than 100 milligrams per deciliter. And a person with diabetes has a blood sugar of 126 or higher. And so that if you are in that gray zone, if you have a fasting blood sugar after an 8-hour fast, and it is between 100 and 126, you're not quite normal, but you're not quite in the diabetes range. So that's pre-diabetes. Now, they've done studies to see what we can do to prevent the progression from pre-diabetes to overt diabetes. And what, one thing we know is that if you do nothing, if you leave pre-diabetes untreated, you have a roughly about 11% chance of developing diabetes later in life. Now, probably the most effective or the best study done looking at this was called the Diabetes Prevention Program. And what that study did was they looked at people who had pre-diabetes, and they divided them up into several groups. And one group, it was kind of their control group, where they really didn't do a whole lot different, kind of got some basic counseling. There was another group which had intensive lifestyle changes, which they defined as 150 minutes of exercise per week and a weight reduction of approximately 7% based on diet restriction. And then there was another group which got a medicine called metformin, which is a commonly used diabetes medication. And what they found was that every year that these people were followed in the control group, every year 11% of them went on to develop full-blown diabetes. However, the intervention group with the intensive lifestyle, 150 minutes of exercise every week, they decreased their chances of developing diabetes by about 60%. So we know that if you are able to lose about 7% of your body weight and you exercise 150 minutes per week, you will lower your chances of getting diabetes by about 60%. The group that got metformin, on the other hand, they were able to reduce their chances of developing diabetes by 30%. So as far as what can our listeners do, if you can exercise 30 minutes five times a week and monitor your diet and try to lose 7% of your body weight, you'll reduce your chances of developing diabetes over time.
Talking to Dr. Roger Kuhlstad with SMS Health Dean Medical Group. He's an endocrinologist. We're talking about diabetes, why it seems to be on the rise in the U.S., the risks, and how to prevent and treat it. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your own experience. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Tim is with us in Madison. Tim, hi.
Hi. I went from having more of a statement to, I guess, a question. I'm wondering about, I married a woman from England. Christmas cookie recipes, candy recipes, and she kept asking me what corn syrup was. Well, I'm wondering how much corn syrup leads in American diabetes.
Tim, thanks for the call. And Dr. Cole said, I've heard concerns that, well, A, we eat too much sugar in whatever form in the United States that raises our risk of diabetes, and some people concerned about high fructose corn syrup in particular, even as compared to other sugars. Can you sort that out for us?
Well, that's actually quite a challenging question to answer. I don't know that we can necessarily pinpoint that if you have a certain amount of corn syrup in your diet, that will increase your risk of diabetes or not. There have been some studies that have looked at excluding certain nutrients from your diet and whether or not that will prevent your chances of developing diabetes. One study that comes to mind is, you'll have to forgive me, I'm blanking on the name of it right now, but they basically tried to reduce dietary fat. They left the calories the same. There was no weight loss, but they just reduced the fat content of the diet. Now, this is a little different than corn syrup, which, so I hope that I'm still answering our caller's question. But when they just reduced fat content from the diet, that did not affect the rates of progression to diabetes. So there seems to be something that has to do with reducing the overall amount of calories that are being consumed so that you can lead to some weight loss. Now that, you know, I think it's reasonable to say that if you are consuming large amounts of high fructose corn syrup, you may want to try and make some changes to your diet. The one diet that has been shown to reduce the likelihood of progression to type 2 diabetes is the so-called Mediterranean diet. Now, what's interesting is there is no single definition of a Mediterranean diet. So if you look up Mediterranean diet, you will see different definitions. But generally, these diets are typically high in fruits and vegetables, whole grains, beans, nuts, and seeds. And they usually include olive oil as an important source of fat compared to other diets. They sometimes allow for some mild to moderate wine consumption. And generally, they tend to avoid red meat. They tend to rely more on poultry and dairy products as opposed to other sources of protein.
Thanks for that call. We're talking about diabetes in the United States with Dr. Roger Coolstead. He's an endocrinologist with SSM Health Dean Medical Group, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Is diabetes part of your life or a loved one? What kind of lifestyle changes has it required? And have you had concerns about COVID and its impact on people with diabetes? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're talking about America's problem with diabetes. Dr. Roger Coolstead stays with us, endocrinologist with SSM Health Dean Medical Group. He practices mainly in Baraboo and Madison. You can join in with your experiences or questions about diabetes at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Coolstead, before we go back to our callers, I wanted to ask you about diabetes as a risk factor for lots of other things, as I understand it, heart disease and other conditions, and of course, a higher risk from COVID-19. Why is diabetes such a risk factor for other stuff?
Well, there's a number of different reasons why that can occur. So it depends on which risk factor you're talking about. So if you want to know, for instance, why diabetes increases your risk of heart disease, there's reasons for that. But broadly speaking, when blood sugars are elevated, that causes damage to the microvessels in your body. And, you know, we typically think of blood vessels as relatively large tubes where blood is transported. But the blood vessels in our body branch out into smaller and smaller and smaller vessels until they get to the capillary stage, which is a blood vessel about as thick as a strand of hair. And when blood sugars are high, the high sugars tend to cause occlusions in these little vessels. And so the circulation becomes affected over time. We know that if you have diabetes, particularly type 2 diabetes, your risk for developing a heart attack is about the same as if you've had a heart attack previously. So when somebody has type 2 diabetes, they are at very high risk for developing heart attack because of these vascular issues that occur. The same issue occurs in the brain, so there's a higher risk for stroke, and there's also some damage that occurs to the blood vessels that feed the nerves in our body, which is where the neuropathy comes from. Neuropathy being a problem with the nerves that send signals to our brain. So people with diabetes can sometimes have damage to the nerves. Most commonly, we see that in their feet, and they can have painful sensations, almost like ants crawling on their feet or a burning sensation on their feet because of diabetes. Now, diabetes also is a risk factor for COVID-19, particularly it seems to be a risk factor for developing severe COVID-19. And, you know, there's a wide spectrum of how people can manifest the infection. Some people can have, you know, a mild sniffle and perhaps a low-grade fever, whereas other people tend to become extremely ill and require life support and being on mechanical ventilation or something called ECMO. And one thing that we know, at least based on observation, is that if you have a diagnosis of diabetes, you are much more likely to have severe COVID. In fact, there was a study done here in the United States where they found that in the United States, the death rate for COVID was 14% in people who have diabetes, whereas it's 6.2% in people without diabetes. So we know that if you get it, if you get COVID and you have diabetes, your likelihood of getting severe disease and possibly dying is much higher. And what's an even more sobering thought is that if you have type 2 diabetes and your blood sugars are not well controlled while you are sick with COVID, the risk of death goes up to close to 30%. So that's about a 1 in 3 risk. And there's a number of reasons why that happens. In general, when people have diabetes, they tend to be a bit more susceptible to infections. The cause of that is probably related to how high blood sugars affect our immune system and the function of the white blood cells. But there's also some other potential mechanisms that are still being determined. There's certain receptors for an enzyme called angiotensin converting enzyme. And there's even some questions as to whether some of the mechanisms by which statins work could affect that. But just in general, if you have diabetes and you get COVID, that's not a good thing.
Let's go back to our callers now. Steve is with us in Oconomowoc. Steve, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have recently acquired diabetes as a result of having a partial pancreatectomy. And I was wondering how that fits in the scheme of type 1 versus type 2. Is it more like type 1 diabetes or more like type 2? And are the risk factors the same as for type 2, for instance?
Steve, thanks for the call. Pancreatectomy, I'm assuming Dr. Kolstad means part of his pancreas was removed. Is that does that lead to diabetes?
Yes. So, Steve, that is an excellent question and one that I often get from physicians even. So there are several different ways to classify diabetes. And what I had mentioned earlier was sort of trying to paint a broad stroke into separating the two groups out. So you can think of it this way. So the people that we usually think of as having type 1 diabetes, they have an immune disorder where their immune system attacks their pancreas. And we can actually measure these antibodies. The most commonly one is something called GAD65. Now, these people, the classic type 1 patient, they have the antibodies. And we also can see that their pancreas can no longer make insulin. So these are people antibody positive and can no longer make insulin. On the other hand, we have people that have type 2 diabetes who don't have these antibodies attacking their pancreas, and they can still make insulin. So these are antibody negative, and they can still make insulin. Those are the two extremes of the spectrum. Then there's people like you who had a partial pancreatectomy. And those people, or like you, they can't make insulin because part of their pancreas was removed, but they don't have the antibodies. Oh. And so it's sort of this middle ground gray zone. So part of this will depend on how much of the pancreas was removed. So if you still have some residual pancreatic tissue in place and your body can make some insulin, then you may have relatively normal blood sugars. In some people, when you remove part of the pancreas, you've lost a significant amount of insulin-producing capacity, and so therefore you'll have high blood sugars. For general intents and purposes, I tend to consider a person with a pancreatectomy more like a type 1 diabetes patient than a type 2 diabetes patient. And the reason I say that is because a person with a pancreatectomy needs insulin. And especially if they've had their entire pancreas removed, you can't use oral medication to control that. They need to be on insulin.
And we'll have to leave it there. Dr. Kuhlstedt, thanks for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's Dr. Roger Kuhlstedt, endocrinologist with SSM Health Dean Medical Group. We talked to him about a diabetes problem in the United States, how COVID-19 put diabetes patients at higher risk, and how to manage the condition.